The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
This is Football Social Daily, making Monday a little bit more bearable with a quick hit of the latest news, action and gossip from the Premier League. There is a new show every single day, so make sure you are following this podcast in your preferred podcasting app and you'll get it as soon as it's ready. We're going to be venting a little bit of that Monday frustration shortly with a brand new feature to kick off the week on today's podcast, an opportunity for a good old Monday moan about the weekend's football shortly. There's also some tasty transfer tittle-tattle involving Liverpool, Brentford and Tottenham to cover on today's podcast. And that Spurs news will no doubt please Antonio Conte, who was very critical of the quality that he has at his disposal at Spurs at the moment as they lost their third game in a week to Chelsea in last night's Premier League action. That's where we're going to start today's podcast with Niall McCaughan and Marley Anderson on hand to air their views. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Jim. Morning, Marley.
Good morning. How are we doing? Are we not talking about just Newcastle winning a game?
No.
The whole 40 minutes or whatever.
I love that. We've decided not to do heroes and villains on the one weekend that Newcastle have won a match.
Feels like a coincidence, doesn't it? Even though it's not. We are going to start with a teaser today. Today's teaser, which is a question that you will have the answer to by the end of today's podcast. And the teaser today is, which football ground in the whole of the Football League is closest to the River Mersey? It's one of those questions you either know the answer to or you don't. So I'm not going to ask either of you for an answer. I just want to know whether you think you know it or not. And we'll find out at the end whether you do.
Just EFL, yeah? And Premier League? Or just in general?
Hang on. I just need to check
because
something.
If it's just Football League, anyone who knows Merseyside clubs is going to get the answer to this pretty quickly.
Don't challenge him to do research into the question. He's just made up.
No, I've just, it's something.
I think I know.
It's
the answer
one of
to
those
it.
Things. It's like a. It's quite a. So it's outside the EFL as well.
Okay, I think I know the answer.
It goes down a little bit lower. But I'm now doubting my own research. It's one of those pub quiz questions that I would have gotten a pub quiz about 10 years ago, but I've just suddenly worked out it might not be relevant anymore because when I was asked it, it was EFL and Premier League. Anyway, the answer to that question, which may or may not be right, coming up at the end of today's podcast. But let's get stuck into Chelsea 2, Spurs 0, which was a disappointing result for any Tottenham fans, a reassuring result given Manchester City's draw at the weekend to Chelsea fans. I'm not sure they're back in the title race yet, but they're certainly a little bit closer than they were. But can Spurs look at themselves for this one, Marley, ultimately? Because they went against a weakened Chelsea team and they decided to play two centre-backs and four full-backs. They went to contain Chelsea rather than win that game.
Yeah, I seen the lineup, and I just thought, for the life of me, I cannot work that out. Because at least two players are playing out of position. Like, couldn't work out where, you know, there was Tanganga, Davis, Sessegnon and Doherty. And I was like, well, some of them have got to be on a wing, like in a wing-back position. And everyone's in there, Dyer and Sanchez as well. And I just thought, well, he's lost twice to Chelsea in the last couple of weeks. And he's gone. Sod it. I'm just going to go for the point. Which is very unlike Antonio Conte, I think. I mean, he has done it at times, but you kind of expect a manager of his quality to say, I've spotted something in those two games where I can play a different system or different approach somehow, and we can maybe get something out of it. But it was just rinse and repeat. It was just Chelsea dominating, waiting for them to score. And ultimately, once they scored, that was it. You had no sort of belief that Spurs were going to get back into it. And then his post-match comments with his stuff about, you know, basically the team's not very good. Just kind of summed it up. So, yeah, that's Spurs right now. They're a long way away from where they need to be, either to make Conte happy or to even just get results against the best teams in the league, and that's what Chelsea are. So they're Chelsea way further down the road where Spurs want to be. So it's going to take a while for that to get sorted out, I think.
We'll get onto those comments shortly about his team being rubbish in a bit, but firstly, I mean, Tottenham offered so little in the game, Niall, but they might argue that they deserved something for the goal that was chalked off. Harry Kane, a foul on Thiago, put the ball in the net, VAR decided it was a foul and it wasn't a goal. Should it have stood?
Yeah.
Really?
I guess by the sounds of your voice, you don't think it should have stood.
Oh, I think it's really difficult.
I don't think Thiago should have stood.
I think Thiago is very clever with it. I think he's smart.
You think it's a foul?
Because Harry Kane, there's a definite push on Thiago. Thiago goes down. Thiago goes down easily, but at the same time, he is running.
If Thiago Silva pushes Harry Kane in that manner, do you think the referee gives a pen?
If Harry Kane has control of the ball at that period, yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you think Thiago Silva had control of the ball?
No, but
the ball came into the
box.
He overbalanced. Harry Kane puts his hand in the small of his back. There's definitely contact.
I think Harry Kane's stupid,
but
does Harry Kane, with one hand,
push Thiago Silva to the ground? Or is Thiago Silva already fallen over because he's lost his balance? Kane spins him, puts the ball in the net. Kepa comes flying out when he should just stay where he was. Makes it easy for Kane to score the goal. I thought Chelsea were bailed out, to be honest. So, yeah, I can see why Tottenham fans would be aggrieved at that. I thought it was soft. I mean, listen, the referee made the decision. There's no point complaining about it. We've spoken about this on the podcast loads of times. I'm sure we'll talk about it later about how poor VAR and refereeing has been, but it isn't the worst decision this weekend in the Premier League, which it probably should have been. But, you know, it's one of those where you just have to kind of stomach it and go, that's disappointing. But overall, Tottenham weren't good enough to win the game. So, yes, they should have had a goal. I can see why Tottenham fans would be disappointed at that, but they can't hang their hats on that and suggest that that was the reason why they didn't win the game. And I know goals change games in terms of momentum and you know, the impact on the style of play and the possession and stuff like that. I mean, goals can make a big difference in all of those things, but for that to be pinpointed as a reason why Tottenham didn't win, I don't think it's fair. But I do think it was a bad decision. But well, again, if we all disagree on it, it goes to show just how hard a job refereeing is.
Yeah, completely.
Is.
I mean, what's the flip side of that then, Marley? If you think it should have been ruled out, my view is that Thiago's put off balance slightly by Harry Kane, and Harry Kane's being stupid because he has enough time and space without pushing Thiago in the back to actually stop that ball and score the goal anyway.
Yeah, well, I think it was a foul. I think Thiago's trying to turn the shape of his body to intercept the cross, and Harry Kane's hand in his back stops him from doing that. I don't think Thiago Silva had time to dive or anything like that, but when you're off balance and you're trying to change balance, the slightest touch can put you on the floor. Mm. Like, it's just, that's just the way it is. Like, that's just physics and how things work. So I think Kane, who has a track record of marginally cheating, done it again. It's almost the ground version of budging someone when they're in the air. You know, when someone jumps and you give them the slightest touch and they just lose control of the body and they land on the head. Like, it's that tiny touch. It's the balance and the timing of everything.
You mentioned physics, though. I don't know if I believe that that's a reason for it to be a foul.
So, is
like
the argument...
When Rashford kicks a ball, right, and it knuckleballs everywhere, or James Ward-Prowse scores a free kick like he did the other week, which I must admit was ridiculous, he kicks it and it just wobbles everywhere and goes in the top corner.
Mm.
That's physics. It's not cheating. And the contact wasn't enough.
What are you talking about?
Well, you say we're like...
You're talking about a ball and then you're talking about a person falling over.
Yeah, exactly. He fell over. That's the point. Yeah,
because
he was on
pushed.
His way.
Yeah,
he wasn't pushed really.
You said before he had a hand in his back.
He didn't push him, he fell over. He kind of held him there.
Would he have fallen over without that contact? This is the challenge that we have with VAR when people are expecting the right decision every single time. And we've got three people in a room, just like if we were sitting in Stockley Park, we'd be having the same discussion. It would be impossible to come to a consensus as to whether it should have been a goal or shouldn't have been a goal. It's the challenge that refereeing still has, even though we have this huge amount of technology supposedly to aid referees. It's still an impossible decision to make.
Yeah, I mean, if we're being objective here, you're a West Ham fan, so you hate Tottenham, and Marley doesn't really like Tottenham.
I dislike Chelsea as well.
I want to like Tottenham.
I mean, there's no debating Chelsea's first goal, because it was an absolute screamer from Ziyech. He is a man in form at the moment, and I think the little run he's having in Chelsea's team a couple of games in a row is kind of helping him. But what did you make of his celebration? I mean, we could talk about the goal and watch it again and again. It was a beautiful goal. But when he scored against Brighton last week, there was no celebration, which might have been because of his frustration in that result. He scored again yesterday against Spurs, and he kind of just stood there with his arms out. It was a mooted celebration. He had to do something because he just scored one of the best goals of the month in terms of the Premier League. But he was quite mooted. Do you get the impression that from his reaction there, Marley, he just isn't happy at the moment at Chelsea?
Yeah, probably. I think it depends on... Like, that celebration depends on how... sort of what the situation's like. Because you can do that kind of sort of puff your chest out and be like, yeah, like, and not actually celebrate. Because if it was such a good goal, you can be like, yeah, I can do that.
Mm.
Like, and what? Yeah, that's what I can do. But when he's been in and out of the team and he's not really a regular, and there's been talks of him possibly leaving and things like that, I think when you score a goal like that and then you celebrate in that way, it's kind of like, well, yeah, why am I not in the team? That's what I can do. I've just bent one in the top corner. Hugo Lloris has been one of the best goalies in the world for about 10 years, and he's not even moved because he thinks it's flying, thinks it's sailing over his, over the bar. Then he realises it's dipping in, but it's too late to do anything. So he's kind of like looking at it going, please go over, please hit the bar. Please, ah, it's gone in. And then it's just one of them, like, you can't sort of deny that quality. And I think he probably got a right to be, because to be a bit annoyed that he's not in the team most weeks, because I think he provides the biggest goal threat of any of those sort of second strikers that Chelsea have got, like Pulisic, Havertz, Mount, Hudson-Odoi. I think he provides as many goals, if not more, and probably more quality than all of them, because Havertz is getting games because of his price tag, I think. He's playing okay, but he's not scoring many, he's not assisting many. And they're kind of hoping he comes good because he's 70 million quid. And they also spent 70 million on Kepa, and that's gone down the drain pretty much as well. So they can't be seen to, like, they don't want to give up on these huge price tags, whereas Ziyech was like only like 40 million or whatever it was.
Bargain.
Yeah, so I think he's kind of getting overlooked a bit, and I think he'd walk into about 17 other Premier League teams, if I'm honest.
I mean, that's the challenge that Thomas Tuchel's got, isn't it, Niall? That it's the flip side of having a lot of talent or a huge squad depth is you need to somehow pick your right team from that, and Chelsea have got a huge range of attacking players at the moment that aren't potentially performing. Lukaku, you'd say, has been disappointing since he came to Chelsea, for example. How does he unpick that? Does he ultimately need to give, because Ziyech seems to be benefiting from a few games in a row, so does he need to go, right, this is how I play, this is my preferred front three or front four or wherever he is playing, and kind of just stick with it for a while rather than chopping and changing and bringing in these different players and giving them the opportunity?
I think it's a hard balancing act, particularly when you look at Chelsea's form since the start of November. They've not been that good, and that's kind of affected them in the title race. And I think it's fair to say we probably all agree that they're out of the title race now because of that form. They were dropping points when they shouldn't be dropping points. They were drawing with teams that they should have been beating, and they obviously lost that crunch game with Man City. And I think when you're a manager, it's a tough thing to balance, because, you know, do you make changes because you've got a poor result the game before? Or, as you say, do you stick with it and hope that the players come through? And I think, but because Chelsea's form has been so indifferent for the last nearly 2 months now, it's been difficult for Thomas Tuchel to kind of put his finger on it. And I think that's exactly what he said in a press conference recently. He said that, you know, it's hard for him to put his finger on exactly what the problems are. And I guess with each player, there are different issues. So, you know, we talk about Hakim Ziyech. Obviously, Africa Cup of Nations is on at the moment, and he's been exiled from the Morocco national team because of his behaviour on recent international camps, where he was supposedly injured, yet the medical staff checked him over in Morocco and said he was fit to play. And he said, I don't want to play, and didn't train, decided he was going to turn up late to training and all this sort of thing. And he was kind of banned from playing for Morocco. So he's not been included in their Africa Cup of Nations group. I think they've just got through to the knockout stages. So maybe that's a little bit in the back of his mind. Like what Marley mentioned, you know, possibly being slightly unhappy at Chelsea. It hasn't gone amazingly for him, but again, he's a very good player and scored an excellent goal. And I think he scored a goal the other day as well. So, you know, he's looking like what you say, Jim. He's in decent form because he's been getting a run of games. But not every player works like that. And that's the skill of management. And that's why Thomas Tuchel's won plaudits, because, you know, over the last year, because it is a year now that he's been in charge of Chelsea, just about, he's picked consistently a strong team and a team good enough to win games. But the last 6 weeks haven't been good enough. And so, you know, this is the first real turbulent spell. And we know what it's like with Chelsea, where if your turbulent spell lasts for too long, you're gone. Regardless of whether you won the Champions League, regardless of whether you're still in cup competitions, you're gone. That's how Chelsea Football Club works. So it's a solution he'll need to find pretty quickly. And maybe now, winning a big London derby, a big game in the race for the top four against Spurs with that team, maybe that is the inspiration that Tuchel needs. And perhaps he will keep the same team for the next game. But who knows? I think in talking about keeping a consistent team for Chelsea, it's the fullbacks. You know, the wing backs have been so important to the way they play. Ben Chilwell is out injured. Reece James has been out injured. It's something Trevor Stephen mentioned on the dugout last week, and it was a really good point. You know, Chelsea have scored more goals from defenders this season than any other side in the Premier League. Thiago Silva scored a header at the weekend against Tottenham. Those fullbacks were not only contributing with assists, but they were scoring as well. So to lose Chilwell and James has been really big for Chelsea. And how they've replaced them maybe hasn't quite been in the way that they wanted. So maybe that win over Tottenham will kind of kick Tuchel into gear and find a solution between now and the end of the season.
I mean, you talk about consistency. There's now not another Premier League game for Chelsea until the 19th of February when they play Crystal Palace. So it's difficult to build that momentum and consistency when there is a huge break in proceedings. Finally, Marley, there were some comments made by Antonio Conte after the match in which, as you called earlier, he pretty much laid into his squad, criticised the quality he had available, said he was miles behind Chelsea in terms of the players. I mean, clearly he wants some new blood in this transfer market, and he is sending a message to Daniel Levy that Daniel Levy needs to get his checkbook out. If he doesn't back him now, Levy, if he doesn't bring in the players that Conte wants, we know that Conte is a fiery character. Could this be the latest managerial appointment at Spurs that ends in disaster?
Yeah, could be. I think it's utterly pointless to spend so long and so much money on finally getting a quality manager and then not backing him. Like, it's just, it's completely stupid. I mean, I know Spurs have got a complicated financial situation with the money they've spent on compensation, the outgoings they've got hanging over their head. Like, does Kane stay or does Kane go and get you 100 million in the war chest, or do you keep him and then have to come up with that money elsewhere? They've still got the stadium to finish paying off, I think. So that's going to affect things. And if the answer to any of these questions is like, there's no money, like, why have you signed Conte? Because he's a serial spender and he's a serial winner. So he proves he can sign the talent. And the only player I'm really seeing Spurs link with is Adama Traore. And I've said in the past, I don't think Adama Traore is going to fix the problems that Spurs have got. You know, one goal and no assists in the Premier League this season is not the final piece to the Spurs puzzle when you're looking at... I mean, if Spurs were a 1,000-piece jigsaw, I think 400 of them are missing at the minute. So you're never going to complete that jigsaw with just sticking Adama Traore in there. So they need more. They need, and that's going to take time. You can't do it in January. You know, everyone talks about January being a ridiculous month to spend in because nobody wants to sell the best players halfway through the season, especially to a team, you know, higher up. You know, they're trying to sign players from lower down the leagues who are fighting for their own things and have their own things going on. So it's tough. He has a disadvantage that he came in halfway through the season. He hasn't had a summer with the players yet to drill them into his system and work out exactly what he wants. And I think Conte is trying to learn on the job a little bit. We're seeing Matt Doherty play a lot of games. I don't think Matt Doherty's good enough to play for Spurs. I think ideally he wants somebody who can play that wing-back role. Maybe that's why we're seeing Adama get linked, and maybe he's going to try and turn him into a wing-back like he did with Victor Moses at Chelsea a few years ago. But we'll just have to wait and see what he does, because it's going to take at least, I'd say, two summers, never mind two transfer windows. I think two summers. So this one coming up and then see what happens next season. Hopefully they'll bridge the gap towards fourth or fifth. If they finish fifth next season, then that's great. And then they can, you know, push, try and get back into the Champions League the year after, when hopefully the team's rivals around them aren't as strong. They go through a bit of like rebuilding. We talked about Liverpool's front three getting slightly older. We talked about Man United's. Don't know where Man United are going to be in 2 years' time, so they might be a little bit further away than what they are now. You never know. So it's going to take a few years, but Conte has never struck me as the most patient man in the world. And Daniel Levy is probably the hardest man to work for in football, because he doesn't do anything for nothing, sort of thing. So everything seems like a match made in hell when Daniel Levy's one half of it. So we'll have to see, but it's like a ticking time bomb, really, isn't it? But if it gets it right, if they both work together and get it right, Spurs could be a serious force.
There is some potential Spurs transfer news coming up later in the podcast. They are might be delving into the lower leagues for a bit of young English talent. We'll talk about that shortly. But next, we're going to talk about what we hated about the Premier League weekend on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Normally on a Monday we do heroes and villains, but it's become apparent that nobody enjoys talking about their heroes and everyone loves talking about their villains. So we've chopped and changed. We've got a brand new feature for a Monday podcast. It's called Get in the Sea. It's an opportunity to vent spleen and have a moan about the things that have wound us up about the last couple of days of Premier League football. I'll give you an example of what I mean by going in with my Get in the Sea, which was going to be about Emmanuel Dennis messing up my fantasy football team this weekend because two games this week.
Did you captain him?
I did.
Of course you did.
Bang in form at the moment. Everyone thought he was going to be brilliant, so everyone's done the same, which is the only reason this isn't my Get in the Sea, because not only did he not score, but he managed to get sent off in the first of the two games, meaning he's banned for the second game, and I get double sending off points in my fantasy football team.
Honestly, though, anybody that captained him, it's Watford. You've got to remember, he plays for Watford, and Watford are bad, and they're going to probably sack the manager soon. So you can't captain one of the strikers for one of the worst teams in the league. It makes no sense.
I bet loads. If you did it, if you captained Emmanuel Dennis in your fantasy football team at the Sports Social, let us know. Get in.
Make Jim feel less bad about
it. I bet 50% of managers did exactly the same.
Oh, so many did.
Yeah, loads of people did. Which means if it had worked, it would have been pointless anyway because everyone's done the same thing. But anyway, that isn't my Get in the Sea for today. Instead, my Get in the Sea is West Ham fans this weekend.
Ooh, turning on your own, Jim.
Yeah.
That's brave.
Lost at the weekend, West Ham. Very frustrating.
Jim just needs
defeat.
To climb on his high horse here. Hang on.
No, I'm justified here. And it's not just West Ham fans, actually. So it was a late goal from Marcus Rashford, which may or may not have been offside. VAR decided it wasn't offside. Meh, could have gone either way. Now, what wound me up about West Ham fans, and this winds me up about football fans in general, I think, a lot of the time, is the poor grace in which they take a defeat. So in this instance, it was West Ham fans. And the call that allowed that goal has been called corrupt. It's been called favouritism towards Manchester United. And there's even been people showing video clips of the goal and taking a line, like as in one of the edge of the box lines from further up in the pitch,
cleared that up.
moving it across and going, look, he is offside because the line, as you move it, it shows he's offside without any understanding of how physics or
perspective
works. It's like there are going to be decisions got wrong in football. It's going to happen all the time. And when it is decided against you, you just have to suck it up and go, look, forget it. We've lost that game. We move on to the next one. Because you've got it does even itself out and there will be bad decisions. It was only last week against Leeds United that West Ham had a goal allowed which should have been ruled out for offside. Mm. So it does even itself out. So just handle it with some good grace. The league isn't corrupt. The league doesn't have favouritism towards the big teams, I don't think. So just get over it and move on.
I'm glad you clarified that with your opinion at the end.
You've kind of stumbled over one of mine at the minute. It's not from this weekend. It's just a little one I might go into in future. But the saying, it evens itself out. It doesn't. It just doesn't.
It does.
Even if it's minus one, you could go down off that minus one by getting one decision that goes against you.
It just depends how long the period of time is, Marley.
It
could even itself out over 100
years. It's like, we got relegated because of a handball in the Premier League, but in League Two, the linesman was eating a pasty when he should have had his flag up. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work. It's one of them cliches, but let's move on.
Well, what is your Get in the Sea then, Marley?
I don't know. No, come back to me because I think I'm trying to do a bit of research into what I've got. So
okay.
Niall could go.
Have you got a Get in the Sea for this weekend?
Yeah, my Get in the Sea is the name of this feature. I don't like the name of it. I think it's terrible. There's nothing wrong with the sea or getting in it. It should be Get in the Bin, surely. I hope Marley can back me up, seeing as we're both from places near the sea. So hopefully that we can...
Do you know what?
You definitely wouldn't go in the sea near where I'm from. It's just full of chemical waste from Sellafield.
But yeah, we should change it. Nothing wrong with getting in the
Allegedly,
sea.
Allegedly. Before Homer Simpson comes down on me.
Get in the Bin, we should change it to. I could easily choose VAR and not have to explain it because I hate VAR. Mm. Always have done. I've always said on this podcast that I know it's here to stay, but I'm not an advocate for it, and I don't think my mind's about to change. But almost building off the back of what you said about fans in general.
say just your thing you hate is fans in general.
No, I love football fans. I think that they're a massively underappreciated cog in the wheel that is football. We said last season when there were no supporters in stadia that they are the missing piece of the puzzle. They're always overlooked, particularly when it comes to fan ownership. You know, there was Everton fans outside the game against Aston Villa at the weekend, sort of talking to Bill Kenwright. There was Colchester United fans outside of their stadium talking to their owner, explaining that they're not happy and they want improvements. We've seen protests about owners in the Premier League as well over the last year or so. I think fans are completely, their voices aren't heard enough. I think they're underappreciated. I think they're overlooked. I think they're taken for granted. So I love football fans. I am a football fan and always will be. But when I say fans, it particularly comes down to the social media thing and the overreaction side of things. Mm. And that kind of ties into what you said. So my get in the bin is all of the Manchester United fans, all of the other fans of other clubs who decided that it would be a good idea to post on Paul Pogba's Instagram page when he posted a photo of him praying. He's a Muslim, Paul Pogba. Mm. I think he posted a photo of him praying. The amount of people that abused him for that and tied that message that he was trying to send on his own social media profile to football. The post that he made was nothing about football. You know, this guy is a footballer, and yes, he's probably not been good enough for Manchester United since he's been there. But his religion and his personal life have nothing to do with that.
No.
And there's no need to comment on his post abusing him, giving him stick, sending him messages and information that he doesn't want to read or doesn't want to hear. And it got so bad that he's had to delete the post. Now, it's quite a religious time, I think, at the moment for in the Islamic calendar, I think. And so he obviously felt compelled to post that. And the fact that he's had to delete it because of the amount of stick he was getting is so poor. So in terms of football fans kind of needing to get in the C/bin, I think it would be those who feel that it's okay to just send messages of abuse to people on social media behind the veil of anonymity. Mm. And, you know, it's not the first time, it won't be the last time that we'll talk about this on the show. It's just depressing, Jim. It's just depressing. You know, it just never ends, does it?
We should also, there is a line here as well. And I 100% agree with you and what I was saying as well. There's a big difference between football fans and football fans on social media.
Yeah, and the majority of football fans here
are
absolutely golden. Like, a lot of them are brilliant, but there are a small minority, and it always is a small minority that ruins it for everyone else. And whether that be with unsavoury behaviour, distasteful comments, sexism, racism, homophobia, all of these things. You know, come on, guys. It's 2022 now. We're in a position now where people should be able to just keep their mouth shut. And there's an old saying, isn't there? Many people's mothers used to say to them, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say it at all. And social media seems to have eroded that little idiom there. So it's a shame, but that would be my get in the bin for this week.
And a very good one as well. Not Marley, what have you got? Have you done your research?
He's just on the phone to Oxford University Library at the moment.
Do you know what? I was watching something and I've kind of got the research a bit wrong because I was gonna say the decision from the Brentford Wolves game where the referee stopped the game because he wanted to send off Toti from Wolves, who I've, by the way, never heard of. Don't know when he signed in, by the way. Got no idea who that is. But and he stopped it and then he rescinded his decision, his red card into a yellow card, but he should have let the game flow because there was an advantage and Brentford were inside Wolves' box. But the way it all worked out, Brentford scored from the resulting free kick. So I thought it was like perfect, like karma. Like the referee tried to make a decision. He was right to call it back because he thought it was a red card. And then he floated one into the box and Tony put a sensational volley into the back of the net. And I thought that was really good. So that's not something I hate. That's something I kind of like. But it reminded me of a decision which I hate, but I can't think of a one that happened this weekend, but it still annoys me, and it's annoyed me this weekend because it's annoyed me like today. And it's this thing in football where you can get punished for your follow through of a tackle or winning the ball. Mm. So, for example, like when you overrun the ball and then you're about to hit another player, but you flick the ball away first and then your following foot catches him on the top of the foot or the ankle or the shin or something. My book, that's not a foul because you've already won the ball. And it happens week on week. I thought it happened this week. This is what I was trying to do before that. I thought it happened this week, but I don't think it did. But it just winds me up how this new craze in football is you can get punished for winning the ball. And surely football is about winning the ball.
Like, didn't it happen
how
to
keeping
West Ham
possession of the ball
earlier on in the season? One of your players got sent off for kicking the ball, and then as they followed through, the studs made contact with someone's knee. Was it Cresswell, maybe?
Yeah, that ring. I can't remember the exact incident, but it does ring
a bell.
It
was just someone clearing the ball, and they got sent off for it.
Yeah, it was
quite early in the season.
Legs slightly raised, but he got the ball and then followed through into the player.
I can't quite remember exactly, but I do remember it happening to West Ham.
A similar kind of thing happened with Southampton against City at the weekend when, I think, was it Armstrong on Laporte? Mm. It's not the same, that one, because that's kind of like they were both going for a bouncing ball kind of thing. But even that, I thought, you know, people demanding a red card for Armstrong when, like, there are times in football matches where you've got to raise your foot to get the ball. If the ball's bouncing, you can't wait until it's on the floor.
Otherwise,
we might as well play with a medicine ball and just make sure it never touches the air, you know?
What about times when you have to put your left hand in a player's back?
sometimes you've got to do that. Sometimes you get fouled.
We are getting to a place with football at the moment, though, where it is becoming less and less contact-based.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And that's annoying.
Yeah, it is annoying. Well, that is Marley's Get in the Sea. You can always contribute to this every Monday, by the way, because we're going to do it every single week. A chance to have a little bit of a moan about the weekend's action. At The Sports Social on Twitter is the place to head if you want to get involved. Right, we're going to wrap up with some transfer rumours next. Some deals in the offing for Tottenham, for Brentford, and potentially for Liverpool as well. We'll do it next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Going to rattle through some transfer rumours. Still a few days left of the transfer window. 6 days left until it closes, which means there's still 5 days before David Moyes decides to put a bid in for anyone. We're going to start off with Tottenham, as I said earlier. They're delving into the non-league for a new recruit, Luz. And winger Ollie Tanner is of interest, says The Athletic. Brighton are also interested in this guy. I've got to say, 19 years old, Ollie Tanner. Not a name I'm massively familiar with. Can either of you boys add any intel into this fella?
No, I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
What I do know, though, is that Lewis are a club, I think they're based near Brighton. Their club crest is a castle, and their stadium's called the Dripping Pan.
I know they're very good in terms of equal ops.
Yes,
so their
men and women
team,
get paid the same.
Exactly, which
I think
is brilliant.
The women
that's all I know about them.
The women are
Does that mean the men get paid nothing or the women get paid loads?
I think it's probably the former, to be honest with you.
Well, the women's team are at a higher standard than the men's team, I think it has to be said, in terms of league pyramid and league structure. But seeing as we don't
Sounds
know anything...
like a friendly is in need, once and for all.
Seeing as we don't know anything about this guy in particular, I think what we can highlight, Jim, is the how you can uncover a diamond in the rough by signing from non-league.
Yeah.
Everyone knows the Jamie Vardy story. Tyrone Mings started in non-league. There are multiple examples of a player beginning in non-league and working his way up through the pyramid. I mean, one I know fondly is Jamal Lowe, who currently plays as a winger for Bournemouth, who are doing well in the Championship. We signed him from Hampton and Richmond Borough. He came to Portsmouth, went to Wigan, went to Swansea, and he slowly worked his way up from League Two to the Championship. And maybe if he gets promoted with Bournemouth, he might be a Premier League player. And no doubt when he scores his first goal in the Premier League, if that ever is to be the case, the commentators and the pundits will go, Jamal Lowe, what a story. He was a car salesman from, you know, from West London. He was a PE teacher from West London. Mm. And now he's this, which is brilliant. Now he's a Premier League goal scorer. So everyone knows the Jamie Vardy story. Everyone knows how non-league players can be hungry to prove themselves. But to go from that level to Tottenham Hotspur is a massive step up. To go from non-league to League Two is a huge step up. So to then maximize that by another four divisions, to go from, I'm not sure what, are they in the Conference South? So what's that, the sixth tier? To go from the sixth tier to the first tier, he's probably on a part-time contract. He probably gets paid to play rather than paid per week. And so then to come up and kind of quit a full-time job, or, you know, to then go up to Tottenham, I can't imagine he'll be a first-team proposition. I can't imagine this is someone Antonio Conte, as Marley discussed earlier, has been trawling through the footage of looking for in terms of this new saviour who's going to help Tottenham get in the top four.
No,
so,
he'll be bought in and loaned out, won't he?
He'll be bought in, loaned out to a lower league club, or he'll be brought in and then, you know, kind of played in the under-23s as a 19-year-old. You know, he'll probably be in and around that group, part of the development squad. So, yeah, nice to see Tottenham looking in the non-league for players, because I do think there's some excellent talent in non-league football, which often goes undiscovered. So it's nice to see them looking, but I can't imagine this is someone who will be seen as a name to remember in the Premier League in the next couple of years. It probably be, if that is to be the case, a bit further down the line than that.
We'll move on, as none of us know anything about
this. I'm just reading he's been training with Spurs for the last couple of weeks, and then playing for Luz over the weekend.
It's always quite exciting when
I've just seen him score an absolutely ridiculous free kick 12 days ago, something like that.
Well,
anyone
can go and look on the internet, Marley. so we'll let people do that.
Yeah, go and watch his free kick, left-footed, absolute beauty.
A player we're probably all more familiar with is Christian Eriksen. We know what happened during the Euros with his heart issues. He could be heading to the Premier League, say Sky Sports sources. Sky Sports sources is normally some bloke on Twitter, but in this occasion, there looks to be some truth in the suggestion he could be coming to Brentford. Currently, Brentford are doing their due diligence on the player. I guess that means they're looking into his health issues and checking that he can still play football at a professional level. Could be a gamble, this one, Marley, but if Brentford get the Christian Eriksen that 75% of he was last time he was in the Premier League, it's a hell of a signing.
Yeah, I think this is
very un-Brentford as well.
Yeah, I think it's a relatively risk-free move. And I say that as in like footballing terms, obviously not gambling on his health or anything like that. But I'm sure he'll be fine, because like the medical staff will be super aware of what they're looking for now, and, you know, taking precautions against it. I think there's multiple cases of players playing with, is it called an IDU or ICU, something there? The little pacemaker type
not
device.
Not ICU, I think it's ICU's. Intensive care unit. I think it's not.
Yeah, it's
I know what you mean.
Pacemaker anyway, basically, isn't it? So I think Daley Blind plays with one. There's a few others as well. So you're talking, as long as his safety's all right, I think they're going to get a good player, because I think if you look at Brentford, where they sort of struggle is that final pass. Sometimes the general play is pretty good. They can keep the ball, they're comfortable in possession, they're pretty brave with it, and they try and play. I think if you can slot Eriksen into that position behind Ivan Toney, somebody like Ivan Toney could do very, very well with Eriksen behind him. I think he needs more chances. Did he get 36 or something last season? He broke the championship scoring record. And this season he's found that it's a lot harder in the Premier League. You know, he's marked tighter. Everyone knows his reputation. So I think you need another focal point to say we need to be worried about him as well. And Brian and Bermo and Johan Visser and Vitaly Janelt are just not players who you go, Christ, we've got to stop them. You go, we've got to stop Ivan Toney, and then we kind of stop Brentford, hopefully. Whereas if you bring in Eriksen, I think Eriksen's used to having players trying to stop him playing for 10 years now, and he knows how to carry on playing, finding them little pockets of spaces, finding them passes, delivery from set pieces and goal threat. He's got everything, or he had everything. And then has he still got it? I think he does. I think a big incident, but I don't think it's enough to just end him as a player. Like, he got to a massively high level with Spurs. He was struggled at Inter a bit with his sort of being frozen out by Conte and stuff. But if he comes back, I think he's got a point to prove again. And I think a hungry player and a hungry Christian Eriksen to prove people that he's still around and still knows what he's doing, I think is a really smart business, I think, from Brentford.
Looking at a six-month loan, well, not actually, 6 months won't be a loan deal because he's a free agent, but a six-month deal, which kind of works for everyone, gives Christian Eriksen an opportunity to prove himself again. It gives Brentford a player who could
solidify their Premier League status. Not that they're looking too threatened in that at the moment.
I'd say
anyway.
He'd be perfect back at Spurs if Conte wasn't the manager.
Very true. Right, one final rumour. This is coming from transfer guru Fabrizio Romano. He says Liverpool are looking at Fulham's 19-year-old winger Fabio Cavallo, who always impressed me in the Premier League for Fulham last season. He seemed to have a little bit of a spark about him. The Mail are also reporting that West Ham and Leeds fancy this player. Could be a decent deal, this. And I guess we've talked a lot about this refresh of the front three, Niall, of Liverpool looking to bring in replacements from Mane and Salah. We're probably not talking about him stepping right into those shoes, are we? But this is a player that will be earmarked for the future and does offer a similar set of attributes, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a point worth making, that it's not going to be someone, as we mentioned, who comes straight into the team. And a good example of what Liverpool have done with someone akin to this lad is Harvey Elliott, who is a player they signed, I think, was it from Blackburn, Marley? From Blackburn. Yeah. And, you know, he was someone who was quite raw but talented and, you know, needed some perfection. But after a bit of time, whether that be out on loan or in the sort of under-23 setup, getting to know the club, training at elite facilities, hanging around with first-team players and really getting up to standard, when he was thrown in before he got a nasty leg break earlier this season, I think, he looked really, really good. So I think, you know, if you look at Harvey Elliott,
Fulham they signed him from.
Fulham, was it?
Sorry, he was on loan.
On loan at Blackburn, that's it. Sorry, I knew he was on loan somewhere, but couldn't think where. But he signed him from Fulham, yeah, you're spot on. And then, just, you know, a bit of time in the first team has done him a world of good. And obviously he's out injured at the moment, but he was someone who really caught the eye, particularly in the cup games when he featured. So Liverpool have made some quite astute signings in those forward positions. I think they know that as good as Sadio Mane and Mo Salah are, they're not going to be there forever. And, you know, they still might be there for another two or three seasons at the very least. But they do need to start thinking about how they replace these players. And that's something that, you know, the elite clubs do need to figure out. Like Manchester City, replacing Vincent Kompany was an issue for them for a season. And then they found Ruben Dias, who's been absolutely excellent. And Laporte has come into the back line. And John Stones has seen a resurgence in form. Fernandinho keeps signing one-year contract extensions. It took them ages to try and find the right profile of player that they were keen on and Pep was happy with to replace Fernandinho. Rodri has now come in and he's a first-choice Manchester City starter over Fernandinho, who's been excellent. So I think that getting these decisions right is important for the elite clubs, and Liverpool will be no different. So if you look at their track record of signing forward players, Harvey Elliott has impressed me. He's still a very young lad. Minamino was not a stab in the dark, but he's someone with a lot of energy. He's been out on loan at Southampton as well, getting Premier League experience, but I think he only cost like 11 or 12 million, which in modern money is not a lot. And now we look at Diogo Jota, who they signed from Wolves, who's just slotted in absolutely brilliantly and scored a fair amount of goals. And he's been perfect replacement or even a starter, really, for that front three. And he's a great foil to the rest of them. So I think that that's a really good example. So now if we add another player to the mix, you'd have to suggest that with the way things have gone for Liverpool in terms of who they signed, they would have had their eye on this lad. And, you know, I guess that's credit to Fulham for producing the likes of Harvey Elliott. And now there's another player that could be on his way to Liverpool. So, you know, their youth setup is very good down at Craven Cottage. I must give them credit for that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know a great deal about this lad, but I certainly think that if Liverpool are interested, that says a lot.
A few youth prospects getting the eyeballs in the Premier League at the moment. Right, that is it for today's Football Social Daily. Just time to wrap up our teaser. Which football ground, was the question, is closest to the River Mersey? Now, I may or may not be right on what I thought with this one because it's slightly an old question. But do you know what? I've done some very basic looking on Google Maps over the last 40 minutes and I think I've got an answer for you.
Gone so, for the eye test of you.
Marley, Niall, any guesses? Which football ground is closest to the River Mersey?
I think this could be a trick question because since I've moved up north, I've noticed that the River Mersey does actually go through Manchester.
It does.
So maybe it could be a Manchester club. It could be... I thought that it might be Old Trafford for a minute, but I thought that's actually the River Irwell, isn't it? That goes around the back of
the
Old Trafford.
Canal as well,
and then
close
the
to
canal.
There.
My initial answer would have been Tranmere Rovers when you said league
same.
Club.
Yeah.
And then you said it might not be a league club. And then I was thinking Marine.
Well, that's a completely different answer I've not looked in.
Marines on Crosby Beach, okay, which is next to the Mersey. Yeah. So I'm hoping it could be them.
Tranmere was the one that I considered being potentially the answer that would throw mine, but I've looked into that and that is not the case.
Okay.
So but it might be Marine. I'm going to look at that
could be wrong.
While Marley offers up his suggestion.
Well, I also think it's a Manchester-based club because it runs so far through, but because it's Manchester, I don't think it's a city centre thing, so I was going to plump for Stockport. Edgeley Park, which is just on the sort of outside of Manchester.
Which is the correct answer.
Edgeley Park
is 400 metres from the banks of the River Mersey. Marine... Wow. I mean, it depends where the River Mersey starts. It's impossible to tell. It looks to me like it's a little bit further away from the mouth
ground,
of the River Mersey.
Edgeley Park is a great ground.
Very old school football ground is Edgeley Park. Yeah. That is it for today's Football Social Daily. We'll be back tomorrow with more Premier League news and views. We'll catch you then.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.